Hey there, welcome to Pickled Parables. This podcast is presented by Parable Ministries as a Bible teaching resource. Thank you for joining us. Pickled Parables is a podcast about taking in and living out the Bible. Here we will study, contemplate, and testify to the Bible's incredible teachings and how it leads us to live better lives. To stay up to date with all things Parable, follow us on Instagram at parable_ministries and visit our website at parableministries.com. We hope today's message finds you well.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Pickled Parables by Parable Ministries. A huge shout out to Hunter and Jesse for letting us be dope on the mic again. And we're just super excited to be here. I'm Noah.
And I'm Alex.
And we're just excited to dig into this podcast. So what did we talk about our first podcast, Alex?
Yes, our first podcast, if you want to go find it. It will put a lot of context for what we're talking about today. We're going to assume that you have listened to it. But that was Truth Triumphs Over Liars. And it was about Elijah. And today we're going to be talking about Elisha. So mainly what we'll be getting into is the butterfly effect, right? Is that how does your actions affect the generation, your own soul, your own body, and everyone around you, right?
Before we get into that, doing a little recap real quick. So Elisha, he enters in 1 Kings 19, and he's kind of like Elijah's servant and maybe errand boy in some senses, and he's really humble in this, in doing this and taking on this role. And so 1 Kings 19, Elijah is told by an angel to eat, and he survives 40 days with that food. He's scared for his life because he's running from Jezebel, and a great wind broke through the rocks. A great earthquake hit, then a fire, and then a soft, gentle whisper. And God wasn't in that wind, he wasn't in the earthquake, and he wasn't in the fire. He was in the soft whisper. And what he told Elijah was to anoint Hazael, king over Syria, and Jehu, son of Nimshi, over Israel, the northern kingdom. Then Elijah was to anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, to be the prophet in his place, because his time is almost up at this point. And then he says, the Lord says to Elijah that 7,000 pure Israelites the Lord will spare, because it's about to be a dark time for Israel coming up. He doesn't say when it will be, but it's about to be rough. And so Elisha is found shortly after plowing his field. Super humble opening. So Elijah comes up to anoint him, and this is essentially what happens, the call of Elisha here. So he's plowing his field with 12 oxen. So Elijah started from pretty modest beginnings, as we know. I mean, he was a hairy man. He was a wild man living off the land. And so Elisha has 12 oxen to plow the field. This man is not, like, lacking. You know what I mean? And so he leaves everything to go follow this hairy prophet into the wilderness, and he's just totally willing to do it.
That's
he doesn't throw anything. The only thing he says was, "Let me kiss my father and mother, and then I will follow you." And Elijah says to him, "Go back again, for what have I done to you?" He's kind of savage here, of kind of snarky. And it says he returned from following him and took the yoke of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the yokes of the oxen and gave it to the people, his people, and they ate. Then he arose after Elijah and assisted him. Again, very humble beginnings. He gives this 12 oxen to the people as food. I mean, who does that? So really cool entry here. And he follows Elijah. He's known as the guy who washes Elijah's feet, basically. So he's not really known as much until he is. And so the background for all of this, real quick, is starting in Deuteronomy, the reason why Israel was in the state as it was. because there's some pretty wicked kings that we talked about last time and that we're going to get into again, because there's wickedness in the land. And that's what Elijah and Elisha are fighting against. And we're talking about today what it means to be unbreakable in a breaking world. Mm-hmm. And Elijah and Elisha's world was breaking. It was broken. And the reason why is because they disobeyed God. They disobeyed his direct instructions. And his instructions were to purify their hearts, to circumcise their hearts, to write his commands on the tablet of their heart, not a physical tablet. And so they didn't do that. They strayed from that. And so this is what happens. In Judges, they were evil. I mean, we hear the mentions of evilness throughout that book. And then we have Samuel in 1 Samuel 8. The people clamor for a king, right? But God says, no, like, you don't need a king. And they say, no, trust me, we need a king.
Like, please, we need a king. He's like, no, right. You really don't want it.
For real. And so he grants them his request through Samuel the prophet. And Saul is made king, starts out fairly decently, then does a pretty bang-up job.
I mean, even before we move farther, is that God notates that they are rejecting him. You know, because when Samuel is like, oh, God, like, these guys are terrible. Like, just don't even listen to him. And God's like, no, don't worry. Just answer whatever they want. Like, they are not rejecting you. They're rejecting me, which I just think leads us down 1st and 2nd Kings so perfectly.
Absolutely. Rejecting God for idols, which we're going to get into in a bit. And so you got Saul, then you got David, and then Solomon. So those are all of Israel united, 12 tribes. But then Solomon doesn't end well, neglects God, makes these high places, these idols, and he sacrifices to idols, even in the temple. And I mean, it's just wicked stuff. And so the Lord says to Solomon, I'm going to take all your kingdom from you and split it if you don't shape up and follow me again and get rid of the idols. And Solomon said no in 1 Kings 11. And so what God says is, because of David's faithfulness, I'm going to rip the kingdom from you, but not in your lifetime. And so his son Rehoboam in 1 Kings 12 is pretty evil, pretty vile. And he worships idols. He follows in his father's ways. And so the Lord gives Rehoboam Judah and Benjamin, two tribes. And then he gives this kind of random guy named Jeroboam, the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom, which is called Israel. So Israel is the north, Judah is the south. And so that is kind of where we're at in the land that we're in, this breaking world that we enter in end of 1 Kings and even going into 2 Kings where Elisha enters. So Alex, give us some background of how Elisha takes the mantle and continues Elijah's ministry. Like what makes this guy unbreakable?
You know, and that's really one of the things that I really like about Elisha. Like when we were sitting here and we were thinking about what really makes Elisha different than, you know, Isaiah, you know, than Elijah, right? Than all these different prophets. And one of the things I really think that's unique about him is that he was able to see Elijah go up back up to heaven, right? And one of the other things that he gets to see is that when we move to 2 Kings 6:16, we're in this war between these nations, right? So these kings are both the Israel, which is the northern kingdom, and I always say it incorrectly, Judah, the south, are in this war, right? And they're kind of battling it out, and they're having this really good intel that's coming from Elisha. And so the king that's invading them, right, he's like, why do they know all of this? right? How do they always know where we're going to be, what we're doing? And they're like, well, see, this is prophet. His name is Elisha. And he has been giving them all the info that, you know, like it's even if like he was in the court himself. And so back to 16, they try and kill him. And when he's surrounded by all of these soldiers and his servant comes to him and he's like, Elijah, we're going to die. We're dead. Elisha replies to him and he says, do not be afraid, Elisha told him, for we are more on our side than on theirs. And he is able to see all of God's chariots, right? Moving into verse 17, all of his chariots, all of his kingdom, all of God's protection over his life. And he's not afraid because he knows that God is with him. And this really strikes me of like, what is Elisha's strength through all of this is that he's so focused on the spiritual. He's so focused on what God is doing. And he's not really focused on the physical things. Like Elijah's downfall, right, was that he was very concentrated on how many people there was versus the enemy, right? He's like, God, this is physically not going well. But Elisha is able to see past that and is able to see that God is moving far more than he could ever imagine.
Absolutely. And the breaking world is really just so awful around Elisha because, but yet it highlights his unbreakableness, so mm-hmm. to speak, his trust in God, his strength of saying to his servant, hey, do not be afraid. It's going to be okay. Or the guy at the beginning of 2 Kings 6, where the axe head drops in the water. So this guy's axe head falls into the water, and it's the only thing he essentially has. He says, if I lose this, my financial status is going to drop. And so Elisha says, I'm going to make it float. And he makes it float. And the guy takes it, and it's like, whoa. But Elisha was just, he didn't throw any fit. He wasn't stressed. He just knew the Lord would provide in that moment.
And he's like, dude, I'm just going to make it float.
Absolutely. And Elisha is it's kind of funny because how he becomes Elijah's successor officially is in 2 Kings 3, I think it is, or 2 maybe, where Elijah goes up in the chariot of fire. Before that, Elisha had asked Elijah, hey, can I have a double portion of your spirit? And Elijah said, this is a pretty hard thing, man. But if you see me departing into heaven, essentially, when I go up in my chariot or whatever, then it'll be granted to you. And so Elisha is with Elijah. He's persistent even too. So you see a persistence in this guy's character where Elijah says to Elisha, hey, buddy, go back. Like when he's about to go up into heaven, you know, you don't want to see this necessarily. Like, and Elisha says, no, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to follow you to the end. And he does it like 3 times. And so Elisha does see him descend into the clouds with his chariot, and he gets a double portion of his spirit. And it's God's power, of course, but it's resting on Elisha, this same power that was resting on Elijah. It's so remarkable, and it's part of what makes him unbreakable because mm-hmm. he wasn't willing to stop.
Yeah, and a quick note is that that's chapter 2 that Elijah goes up. Goes up to heaven. Yeah, and so it's interesting that the whole time, right, is basically nonstop war between these kings. And so one of the things that I was kind of thinking about is just how similar their circumstances are to us, right? So each one of these, you know, like Aram, right, is one of the places, Assyria, like all of these different places, like Edom, all have different kings, right? And they're these really wealthy, rich individuals. And it kind of reminds me a lot of like people like Jeff Bezos, right? These people that have these huge businesses behind them, thousands and thousands of servants, all to build their name, right? Their profit. And so their world isn't necessarily that different from ours. Ours just looks a little bit different. And these people hold so much influence over the individuals that are serving them. And we see that. We see that throughout the kings, right? So we have in the God-fearing kings, we have David, Solomon, Asa, Jehoshaphat, right? And I could keep going on. But then on the other side, you have people like Jeroboam. And I could mention every single king that wasn't faithful to God, but man, it is a very, very long list. But that corruption, that sin is seen throughout all of the populace, right? So it says that when the first king dies, right, and then his son follows him, it always starts by saying he was faithful and he followed in the ways of David and did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Or it says that he wasn't faithful and he followed the ways of Jeroboam and did what was wrong in the eyes of the Lord. But then it's interesting that always follows it is that the people followed them. Right. And that sin didn't just affect the, you know, like you would think that just, you know, it's like, oh, it's just idols. Right. That's all it is. But through the kingdoms, every single one of like Hezekiah, who is in 2 Kings, the chapter 18, I think through 20, I believe. So he starts off and a bunch of his ancestors weren't very faithful to God and all of Judah is in kind of a problem. But he starts off just by following God and following God. And then even when it's hard, he continues to follow God. And it's the whole nation starts to become prosperous. It starts to become, you know, like everybody starts helping each other out. And it's how God's spirit made us to follow. But when we follow sin, when we make these, you know, false idols, when we make these different things that we worship, our phones, our, you know, different electronics, right? When we worship these things with our attention, it removes God from our lives. It removes his blessing over our lives. And it's interesting that part of God's blessing with these kings is that there are some kings that God is like, okay, you've done what's evil in my sight. I'm just going to burn you, right? But most of the kings have natural consequences of their actions. And that's the intriguing part to me, is that there's so many parts of where Judah was going to be overran. And the kings gave up everything. They're like, let's just take all the money and we're just going to bribe these guys.
Right. And it's the practices. So getting into the why God made all these regulations and rules, it was for the benefit and the welfare of the people, for a nation. Like this is how you manage a people and a government. As in, some of these principles are even implemented today in successful governments. As in, you don't tax the heck out of your people like Rehoboam. Rehoboam started that. And that's what caused the split of the kingdom, because the people were like, hey, Solomon and David didn't tax us like this. They didn't burden us with these unfair regulations. And that's what these pagan nations were doing. I mean, heck, they were sacrificing their own kids, these kings of pagan nations. And it's not soon after that certain kings of Israel, King Ahaz of Judah, sacrificed his son in 2 Kings 16:3, and then King Manasseh of Judah as well sacrificed his sons, plural, by fire in 2 Chronicles 33:6. So those are practices of pagan nations, and that's what God was trying so desperately to get his nation to not do. like to not participate in those things. And that's what worshiping idols was to bring about. Again, things and regulations that were unfair to the people, a burden on the people, such as high taxes, sexual immorality was rampant in these cultures. All these things, child sacrifice, again, they're contrary to God's design. And that's the toxicity of sin. Mm-hmm. Right, Alex?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to hit on, is the antithesis, so to speak, of being unbreakable. Because what is breaking? It's the sin, right?
Well, and it's interesting because when you see these kings, you'll see... So the first generation, or like, you know, the first five kings, right, were pretty decent. But all of them didn't remove the idols that the kings before them placed in the temple. And so I thought it was crazy because I was reading through all of 2 Kings, and it didn't strike me until we meet with one of the last kings, Josiah. That's Noah's favorite king, by the way. And
absolutely.
Josiah is a total savage. He goes in there and he removes all of the, you know, like idolatry, destroys the pagan altars, reforms the Passover. And this all happens in like chapter 23 of 2 Kings. And so what I didn't realize, though, as I was reading it, it said that he removed the prostitutes out of the temple. And it like goes through every single thing that he removes and purges from it. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I always think when people talk about the Old Testament that God's just like wanting to burn people, right? He's just like, oh, you just got to, you know, so wrathful. But they have prostitutes in his temple, right? Just imagine going to church and then also being able to get a side hoe. Like, that's how bad this is. And it's interesting that they dealt with this. Like Judea and Israel dealt with this problem the whole time. Like I wonder what it would have been like if they would have had right after King would have been another good king and another good king and another good king. And really the only way that I'm defining a good king is how much they followed God, because God would always correct them, right? We see that even with Hezekiah. There's a few mistakes that Hezekiah makes, but God is always there to correct him, right? He brings his prophet, and his prophet's like, hey, no, we're moving this way. And he's like, oh, yeah, sorry. Okay, moving that way. And I think that's the important part of following God, is that he brings life, right? His commandments are not burdensome. And I think that's what Jesus was really getting at, is that it's the commandments. It's the way that he wants us to live our lives that is beneficial. Like, even if God didn't exist, it would still be the better way to live.
Right. And so a couple things regarding that. So Josiah, absolutely my favorite king, the more I read about him especially. And he was really the only king that purged everything, as Alex was saying. And in fact, he was prophesied about in 2 Kings 13:2. This man of God comes to the altar where Jeroboam is essentially doing pagan sacrifices on. And he says, hey, man, this king named Josiah is going to essentially get rid of the high places, get rid of the pagan priests, and restore the altars of the Lord and sacrifices to Yahweh alone. And he does, sure enough, several chapters in the next book, in 2 Kings 23, he does it. Which is incredible as far as being unbreakable, right? Not compromising. And God really tells his people what's going to happen. So Ezekiel 18, fast forward, when they're in exile, Ezekiel writes to them. So it says, yet you say, why should not the son suffer for the iniquity of the father? When the son has done what is lawful and right, and has been careful to observe all my statutes, he shall surely live. That soul, the soul that sins shall die. The son shall not suffer for the iniquity of the father, nor the father suffer for the iniquity of the son. And a few verses down, in 18 verse 23, God says, have I any pleasure in the death of the wicked? He would rather that people turn from their ways and live. Mm-hmm. That's what God is about. That's who God is. And that's sin's toxicity that keeps us from that. And Josiah realized you have to purge everything that's in your life that is contrary to God. And we know what it is. Our flesh will tell us. It's the pleasures oftentimes. So, oh, I want to spend 24 hours straight playing video games, right? Or I want to spend my time and money to engage in something promiscuous that I'm not supposed to do, right? It's contrary to what God has told us to do. It's outlined in Scripture.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know that we're touching on this heavily, but when Josiah comes in, Judah is not in a good place, right? So it's about to be wiped out. And that's pretty much where Judah sits most of the time, is it's about to be wiped out. And even though, like, what's interesting is that he brings back a bunch of the old things, right? So it's the first Passover that they officially had that was like, the king was like, okay, everybody's going to do this just like the commandment commands. It was the first one that happened all since the judges. That's insane. All the way since back the judges. So back since God was the one that was leading them, right? And not a king. This is the first guy that had implemented that back. And you start to see Judah start to pull out of its poverty, right? But then it stinks. His son walks in the way of Jeroboam, right? And his son after him, again, walks in the way. And God's anger against them has just reached its full point, right? It says, and my mind is just blown when I read this. It says that they were so evil that they surpassed the people that had the land before them. I mean, what?
It's pretty intense.
God's chosen people are worse than the people that were there to start with. And so that's when God's like, yep, nope, I'm done. I'm gonna hand my people over to these, you know, to anybody at this point. And my judgment is going to be, it's going to be quick and it's going to be clean. But I truly believe that if those kings chose to follow God, I think it would have been saved.
I do too, because God says it in his word. He says it in Deuteronomy, and he said it in other passages too, where if they turn to him, they will be saved. Mm-hmm. He'll protect them. 1 Kings 9 hits on it, where God says to Solomon, as he's dedicating the temple, he says to him something along the lines of, hey, if you do what is right and walk in my way, I'm going to prosper you and your descendants and protect you guys and make you into a mighty nation that can be a blessing to other nations and a beacon of light and hope. But if you don't, he tells him straight. He says, you can follow me or you cannot. He says the same thing in Genesis to Adam and Eve, right? Hey, you can either walk with me or you can take that fruit over there of the knowledge of good and evil. It's not fenced off. It's just another tree. It's up to you.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that he even references all the way back to 1 Kings 9, 7, when he says, I'll start at 6, actually. Basically, he says that if your descendants abandon me and disobey the commandments that I have given you, and if you serve and worship other gods, which they did the whole time, I mean, that's the crazy thing, is that every single time they kept doing this, God kept saying, for the sake of my servant David, which just almost brings tears to my eyes, like your sons and your daughters and their grandchildren will be blessed just because you knew God. Like, even if they walk away from him, they will be blessed just because God loves and had a relationship with you. And what the interesting thing is, he says, then I will uproot Israel from this land that I have given them, and I will reject this temple that I have made, and the temple is destroyed, right? And that's kind of the thing that seems to happen. It seems to be this never-ending cycle of we find truth, we find life, and then we go right back into death. And that's the reason why Elisha, being unbreakable in this time, right? So he doesn't compromise. We see this. He's resistant. And I use the word resistant because nobody's perfect, right? And he had his own problems. But he was resistant to all kinds of sins.
Resistant to greed, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, one of the ones that I find the most interesting is when the king of Syria's servant, it's one of his main dudes, and he has leprosy, right? So this king starts hearing about this guy called Elisha and how he does all these miracles and stuff. So long story short, he comes over. Elisha tells him to go bathe in the Jordan River, and he has a little bit of problems with that, but he still does it, and he's healed, right? But he brings a ton of money. He brings 750 pounds of silver and 150 pounds of gold. What? That's so much money. But the thing that I find so interesting about it is that Elisha is like, take it back with you. Like, I don't want it. And his servant is like, what are you doing? That's a ton of money. We need that money. You know what we can do with that money? He's like, we don't need money. We have God, right? And so, again, he's not looking at physical things. He's so focused on the spiritual, right? So, like, he's focused not on the symptom of the problem, but the actual core of the problem, people's hearts, the unseen things, the things that only God can see, the only things that only God can reveal to us. Those are the things that he's set on. And so what ends up happening is that his servant goes out to him and is like, oh, no, actually, we want a little bit of money. And he actually ends up getting the leprosy when Elisha's like, did you think that I wouldn't know?
And you know what's so ironic, guys? Listen to this. Is that Gehazi, Elisha's servant, who gets this leprosy because of his greed in 2 Kings 5, he's the same servant that served Elijah initially. Like, this guy's been around for a while, and yet his greed got the best of him. He had a moment of breaking, of vulnerability, and it cost him. It says, leprosy will cling to you and your descendants forever.
Yeah. And I actually think that if he would have repented, he probably might have gotten it off his descendants. But I do have a question for you. So, Noam, what should we be seeking to follow about Elisha's life? Like, how can I apply that to my life?
So I think it involves two words. First word, discipleship. Second word is discipline. So Elisha had both. He was willing to be discipled, and he fell under the tutelage of Elijah. And he listened. And he sat and heard. He didn't utter a dang thing, well, that we have recorded. As in, he stayed quiet, he did his thing, and he learned from Elijah. And it's no surprise that he wasn't even willing to leave Elijah. Because what Elijah had was so dang good that he said, I can't leave this for anything. Like, I've already given up. I mean, he gave up his 12 yoke of oxen. That's a lot of oxen. And he said goodbye to his mother and father and everything he knew. So again, discipleship. He's willing to be discipled by this guy. Just like the 12 disciples with Jesus, they had to leave a lot of things in order to follow Jesus. They had to leave their businesses, not their wives per se, but they left a lot of things in order to follow Jesus. It's the same thing with Elisha. And discipline. He was disciplined to a T. Again, he said, do not be afraid in the midst of war all around him. He told the kings, hey man, what do I have to do with you? Like, I'm just chilling here. And he was so laid back, and he would tell the kings what's going to happen, and he would pronounce God's covering or judgment, whatever it was. But he was so confident in his calling, and that's where the discipline came in, because he didn't really have anything wrong with him. Well, that's recorded. Now, obviously, he was probably imperfect, but
still human.
But What we have in the text is a very disciplined, confident man of God. And so whether you're a woman or a man, we can be sons and daughters of the Most High King. We can be disciplined. And honestly, the application here, the biggest thing I can hit on, is fall under the discipleship of somebody. So find a mentor, get somebody who's older than you, who has lived this life for a while, who's walking with the Lord well, and learn from them. Learn why they follow Jesus, why it's so important to them, what they do, what's their daily rhythms, and seek to emulate that, obviously, as is in line with God's word and Jesus, but seek to chase after Christ. And that's what I think Elisha did really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess in summary, right, what Elisha did phenomenally well is that he had a no-compromise position, right? I don't think there is anywhere that we see Elisha compromise his beliefs. And Elisha was also amazing at seeking advice, right? So he would be the guy that would be scrubbing toilets for Jesus, you know?
Amen.
He was the guy that would be washing feet, you know? He didn't care where he was as long as it was serving God, right? So we have to throw down this idea of our own pride, and we have to serve wherever we can, right? We have to find somebody that can lead us, that can, I guess, quote unquote, give us a double portion of their spirit, right? Of their advice, of their what they have learned at that period.
Yeah, and a great example in my life, Alex, you can think on this in your own life of someone who's mentored or discipled you. But when I was in the Army, I did 5 years, ended just a couple years ago. But I worked as a chaplain's assistant, and I worked with pastors who were really men of God. And I'm thankful I got assigned to these specific men. And they taught me so much. They were old enough to be my father type thing. And I learned from them. I learned how to walk with God better. They talked with me. They listened to me. They mentored me. I complained even a lot of the time, and they still bared with me and gently guided me to what was better or what was of the Lord. And that's what it's about, is finding someone we can come under and learn from. And if it weren't for those chaplains, I know that was my job to assist those chaplains, but I could have had a mindset where, no, I'm not going to learn anything from them. You know what I mean? But I stood in that humbly, asking for the Lord to give me, in a sense, a double portion. Like, Lord, please help me. Help me learn. So what's one for you, Alex, that you have really benefited from?
So for me, I've been helping out with our children's ministry at the church. And we have a guy, his name is Spencer, and he has a guy that has made a lot of mistakes in his life, and he's made a lot of good decisions in his life as well. And so the way that he approaches everything, he's just a guy that you just respect. I've never met anybody that doesn't respect him. I love the way that he comes across, the way that he like mentors people, the way that he's always growing people around him. And so when I already look at like how much I've learned from somebody, it's something that you can bottle, what is it, like 40 years of experience, you know, within what, 3 years of just following this person. And you've gained so much. And each person has something to teach you, right? Be humble, listen, follow. And this world may be broken and it may be fallen, but we can make a difference for this generation.
Absolutely. And the difference, honestly, is not going to come through isolating in your room and just staying there 24/7. It's going to be getting out there, again, coming under the discipleship of somebody and learning how to interact with your community who's breaking. Mm-hmm. Everybody's broken. That we struggle with Jesus, and we're in a world that does not know God. So what does it mean to interact with that? So those are some questions we want to leave you with, and we hope this has really encouraged you guys. And again, shout out to Hunter and Jesse for giving us this opportunity yet again, and we hope to hop on here soon. But Elisha, that's it. Any concluding thoughts, Alex?
No, that's everything. I hope that you guys just continue to remember that, again, it's about how you can affect your generation by being righteous. But we have appreciated your time, and I hope that you guys have a blessed day. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Pickled Parables. If you enjoyed this message, please rate us, subscribe, and share with your friends. If you're interested in more things like this, check out our secondary podcast called My Dusty Bible. To stay up to date with all things Parable, follow us on Instagram at @parable_ministries and visit our website at parableministries.com. Parable is a volunteer organization, and we would deeply appreciate your prayers. Thank you for joining us today. We'll catch you later.